The Israel Report with Rolene Marx.
Shalom.
Shalom, Manishma. Oi. I'm spreading these rumors, Chad, that I know how to speak Hebrew. Just now people are going to start expecting me to speak Hebrew.
How long have you been in Israel?
In fact, on Sunday, I celebrate my Aliyaversary, and it is a whole decade, a whole 10 years, which makes me an Ola Vatika, a veteran immigrant, and no longer a Ola Chadesha, new immigrant.
So you do speak the language.
Well, let's just say my Dothraki at times might be better than my Hebrew, but I do persevere.
Tell me, in Israel, is Yiddish still a thing or is it dying out?
Well, Yiddish has never really been a language in Israel, unless you're amongst certain sectors of society, like the ultra-Orthodox, the Haredi. They speak Yiddish. That's how they communicate, believing very much that Hebrew is the language of prayer. But in Europe, in places like Hungary and Poland, the language is starting to have a comeback. And I think that there are some things you can only say in Yiddish. I mean, you have to remember that Israel is a mosaic of so many different cultures, people from Europe, people also from North Africa and the Middle East, Jews who predominantly spoke Arabic, and then some of the Sephardi Jews from Spain, from Portugal, who spoke Ladino. So there are quite a few historical languages that we can talk about, but Hebrew being one of our national languages, Arabic being one of the other official languages, and more and more here in Israel, you'll start to hear Russian and French as well.
Yiddish is such an incredible language, and in South Africa, it's made its way into our vernacular. Everybody uses it and doesn't realize it, whether it's Schlepp, whether it's Schlenter, whether it's a Smoch, whether it's this, it's there. It's become part and parcel, and it's so amazing to hear that it's making a comeback in certain European countries, especially Eastern European countries, and that there's still communities within Israel that still speak the language. So that's very heartening, because that must be one of the most expressive languages I've ever heard.
Absolutely. I mean, what can I say? We're full of chutzpah. We're full of, cheek, to speak like this, to do this, and it's, what can I say?
Well, I remember that you were part of the cook squad, so I think a lot of Yiddish must have infiltrated your little group in those days.
But let's state secrets you are giving away, Chad. You are giving them away.
I think they can hear that you are part of the cook squad, but we're going to leave it at there. Let's talk about the business of the day. We're hearing that Saudi Arabia has made a dramatic move with regards to anti-Semitism and Zionist remarks. Tell us more about that.
Well, this is extraordinary. You know, one of the battles that global Jewry, you know, not just here in Israel, but global Jewry has faced over the last decade is this generational teaching of anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism, especially in the Arab world. And a Jerusalem-based NGO called Impact that monitors this kind of language, they have just released their report where they've said that they've noticed a notable cutback, in fact, almost complete cutback in the amount of anti-Semitic and anti-Zionist language that is now carried in the textbooks in Saudi Arabia. This is very, very important. You know, a couple of months ago when we were talking about normalization, a headline very quietly made its way under the radar that the Saudi king had instructed for this to stop, for this kind of education to stop. And he's made good on his promises. And of course, this comes at a time when we are looking at which countries are going to normalize next. Rumor has it that an Asian country, a large delegation that doesn't have formal ties with Israel, that a delegation was in the country this week. We don't know from where. And also, we're looking at the Saudis to be one of the big prizes in the or to ride the peace train. And Jared Kushner, I think, just as the Trump administration starts to hand over and starts to leave office, he said it's absolutely or practically a given that the Saudis will eventually normalize.
Well, that's a great legacy project for the Trump administration to leave behind, that they did capitalize on some peace initiatives that have been initiated, and in other instances, they themselves initiated the peace process. And it's an incredible time to be living through. And I don't think a lot of people saw this happening, especially with countries like Sudan, Morocco, and these countries that are waiting in the wings that will hopefully be joining as well. What else is happening your side that you want to chat to us about, Rolene?
Well, we have to talk Corona, and we have to talk what the situation is like for the country at the moment. Another day of very, very high statistics, and the coronavirus cabinet will convene on Sunday to vote on whether or not we are going to have more restrictions. This is not a decision that's going to be viewed very well by commerce, by store owners. The mall managers have said that they will not be giving instructions to malls to close, saying, you know, we cannot have this situation where you open, you close, you open, you close. It's not sustainable. And also malls contain essential shops. But also interesting today is that a third aid shipment has arrived from the United Arab Emirates, which is destined for Gaza. In fact, I watched a rather large plane make its way into, because I live very close to the airport, make its way to Ben Gurion Airport, and I'm thinking maybe that could have been that particular plane. But the situation is dire for the Palestinians that live under Hamas during this coronavirus crisis. And the United Arab Emirates have sent medical supplies, have sent testing kits, in fact, 14.4 metric tons of medical supplies and testing kits, which could account for the rather large plane that I saw. But let's wait and see if this will be accepted by the leadership. The Palestinian leadership quite famously over the last couple of months declining two shipments of aid from the UAE, saying that they object to it landing in Ben Gurion Airport. And I'm really hoping that as they see these countries start to change their attitude, it might be the wake-up call that the Palestinians need on starting to look at what the prospects for the future as far as their relations with Israel are concerned are.
Rolene, we've got a minute left. Tell me more about LIFA.
Well, this is the moment that Australians have certainly been waiting for. Malka LIFA, the alleged pedophile who's wanted on 74 counts of child sex abuse, and very famously having to go before the courts a number of times, making that appeal that she wasn't psychologically fit to stand trial. This has been deemed, she was deemed as safe to stand trial. And the Israeli Supreme Court ruling earlier this week that they have no objections to her extradition. And Nissan called the Justice Minister signing that extradition treaty. And now Israel has 60 days to make sure that Malka LIFA gets on a plane and goes back to Australia to face the justice system there. And our President Ruvi Rivlin, who will be receiving his coronavirus jab on Sunday, our lovely 82-year-old president, will go to Hadassah Hospital to get his jabby. But before then, he spoke to the governor of the state of Victoria in Australia, and they both had the discussion and the agreement that at last there can be justice for the victims of Malka LIFA.
Rolene, thank you so much for joining us. I look forward to chatting on Monday. Same time, same place, right here on Chai FM.
In any language you prefer, as long as I can speak it.
We'll chat then. You keep well and have a great weekend.
Cheers.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.